Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back. We're visiting for a full hour, I'm very pleased to say, with one of the country's preeminent authorities on a process that, as she has described it, is almost completely non-transparent and seemingly has, at least as its effect, if not its purpose, transforming America in a potentially very problematic way. It is a program that she is following closely at Refugee Resettlement Watch. She is a Yale-educated farmer and mother and political activist who has, thank God, turned her attention and energies and skills to helping the rest of us understand what's afoot here. And I'm very grateful to her for taking time for a full hour to discuss it with us today. And we're talking about a process that is problematic in any number of respects, the UN role, the sort of black box character of how the State Department manages it, the numbers of refugees who are being thrust upon communities through basically self-interested government-paid contractors, and getting the first batch in is only the beginning. They have every incentive and indeed work very assiduously to bring in their family members. So talk, if you would, a little bit about the impact of this process on communities. You started the show by talking about how it had affected yours, but give us a sense more broadly. States like Maine and Minnesota and Tennessee have been in the news over the real deleterious effect, not just the costs, but the social and even political impacts of these refugees. How would you characterize that for us?
It's complicated to pin down because it depends a lot on which immigrant group goes to which state and what happens with them. I mean, some of our refugee groups have been basically, you know, pretty benign in communities, except for the enormous cost on the community of bringing in literally, in some cases, thousands of people over a few years who do not speak English, who do not have job skills, available job skills, and who have very difficult medical issues. But some of the places that have had bigger social impact, I think, are the places where we have certain Muslim groups, the Somalis come to mind, first thing to come to mind, where certain Somali groups have come together. They literally build up their enclaves. And we have stories where somebody, Somali family resettled in Connecticut, did not want to stay, and immediately, within weeks, moves to Minnesota because they want to be with their people, and continues to put pressure on the local community. We've had problems like one Lewiston, Maine comes to mind, where the Somalis resettled in the Atlanta, Georgia area, which is a big resettlement area. We're having problems, conflicts with local African Americans, and went out scouting for a good place to go, and they went to Maine because they found that the social welfare was there, the safety net, social safety net, was very generous in Lewiston, Maine. And so now there's thousands living in Lewiston, Maine, and at a certain point in their population numbers, they become emboldened and start pushing for various accommodations to their religion.
Well, and this comes to the point that I wanted to hit next. And again, it goes back, I think, to the Organization of Islamic Cooperation and the use of the UN as a means of sort of generating these refugee flows. Talk, if you would, about Al-Hijra and the process that it seems to command of Muslim adherence to Sharia to use demographic resettlement and migrations as a means of, well, expanding the universe of their populations in new territories.
Well, there's a great little book that everybody should read by Sam Solomon, entitled Modern Day Trojan Horse, The Islamic Doctrine of Immigration. And Solomon and his co-author say that migration is jihad, and it is the most important form of jihad in the world for Muslims to migrate. And they are to migrate from country to country. They're to migrate from city to city. That's why we see these movements within the United States, especially, for example, of Somalis, not only looking for welfare, but to build new Muslim communities. It's a fabulous little book, and even things like that we would not think would be a big problem. Somebody's building a new mosque in the neighborhood, and you look around and you say, well, there's not enough Muslims in this neighborhood for a mosque. The whole idea is that the mosque is to be the draw for a new Muslim seed community, and so on. And Solomon says that this is the most important, and I believe it is true, the most important part of the jihad that's going on in the world, to build the Islamic State through migration. And everyone listening should figure out some way to get involved in this, to try to stop it by speaking up in your communities when there's a push on for such things. Like in Kansas a couple of years ago, the Somali community, a Somali and Burmese Muslim community, was agitating for a public cemetery just for Muslims. So people have to learn to speak up about that, because this is how they are going to overcome us eventually.
Yeah. Let me just mention again the book that you've just referred to, because Sam Solomon is a former Muslim himself and very knowledgeable, very courageous in describing what this Islamic supremacist program is about. Modern Day Trojan Horse, Al-Hijra, the Islamic Doctrine of Immigration, Accepting Freedom or Imposing Islam. Our guest again is Anne Corcoran of Refugee Resettlement Watch. And Anne, Syria, you mentioned earlier, is now very much in the forefront of this Al-Hijra, it would seem. Talk about what the U.S. State Department has just agreed to do in terms of resettling Syrian refugees who may well be bringing with them this Al-Hijra doctrine and agenda.
Yeah, sure. But first, let me also give you some numbers, which I find astounding. We have resettled over 120,000 Somalis into the United States since 1983, and we brought 9,000 new Somalis here just last year. Last year, the Iraqis topped the list with 20,000 Iraqis, and 60-some percent of them are Muslims, we learned. Now we're moving on, and we're taking Burmese Muslims, too, although they don't want to talk about the Burmese Muslims very often. Now we're moving on to taking 9,000 Syrians. The UN has been badgering the world to take Syrian refugees, and the U.S. has surprisingly drug its feet for the last year. If this had been Bush, he would have been beaten over the head, but they were surprisingly silent in attacking Obama over this. The contractors say 9,000 isn't enough. They want 15,000. They want a total of 75,000 over the next 5 years. These are going to be mostly Muslims, because they're coming from UN camps, which are mostly Muslims. Very few of the persecuted Christians, I am told, go to the UN camps. So they
I've actually been told they're not allowed to be in those camps. And at the very least, if they are allowed to be in them, technically, they find them very inhospitable. So, again, the UN role in selecting who's in these camps and then selecting from these camps who will be refugees, and then basically supplying the list of the such people to the United States, really suggests not only complicity in the Al-Hijra agenda, but also the degree to which we've really relinquished a very important part of our sovereignty to this organization. And you've indicated the numbers involved. How many of these Syrians do you expect we will be obliged to take under this pledging conference that Ann Richards participated in for the United States last week?
Well, she's saying we're going to take 9,000 in this fiscal year. And when she says 2015 has already started. It started on October 1st. We've taken a few hundred in the last 2 months. And she's now saying we're going to take 9,000. But keep in mind, the contractors, the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, has come out, well, all of them have come out and said they want 15,000 this year. And they've actually, and I've not ever seen this in my experience with the program, and it's being led by the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society. They want Obama to raise the ceiling. The president sets a ceiling. We should have talked about that. The president sets a ceiling for each fiscal year. Congress is supposed to review it and actually legally have a hearing, and they never do. They just rubber stamp whatever the president wants. The ceiling for fiscal year 15 for total refugee numbers is 70,000. The Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society is leading a campaign to try to get Obama to raise the level for this year to 100,000, which I have not seen.
Well, this is all the more astonishing because among the prominent people to be targeted by these jihadists, if that's in fact what we wind up importing, of course, will be Jews, needless to say. We'll be right back with more with Anne Corcoran on refugee resettlement and what it means, perhaps, for you. Straight ahead. We'll be right back.
to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.